This is Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson. If you want to be a Kumite champ like me, listen to his show.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bets.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Carson's Corner is brought to you by www.graythought.com. That's www.graythought.com. Happy belated Flag Day, folks. I'm Bob Carson. Another Flag Day has come and gone. What did you get for a Flag Day in 2011? Was it a flag of some sort? That's an unusual holiday from my perspective. I don't ever recall celebrating Flag Day. A flag is basically an inanimate object of little importance. What the flag stands for is what counts, ladies and gentlemen. Then again, only people in Pennsylvania care about Flag Day, from what I've observed. The rest of the country celebrates Philly's Sucks Day on June 14th instead. I'm just kidding, folks. Have you gotten used to my sense of humor yet? I might be investigated by the CIA for my senseless attacks on this innocent holiday. If you stop hearing from me, send in a heavily armed Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn, please do. He is a heavily armed man due to his lightning-fast hand speed. We're going to feature an update from Mr. Quinn very, very soon. I spoke to Dan for about 10 minutes. I got a quick update from him, and I'll play you that exciting interview. Plus, we have a great interview featuring two, count them, two MMA fighters known for finishing. Shannon the Cannon Rich returns to Carson's Corner, and he has brought his friend and associate Eric Prindle to the show with him. Prindle is a big heavyweight hitter known as the American Soldier. And let me tell you something, folks. If you're not a fan of this guy, if you've never seen him, please listen to this interview. I promise you, you will love this guy after this interview. There's nothing not to love about this guy. You know, this was one of our greatest interviews in 2011 that I can remember. Honestly, my heart just felt so heavy after this interview, listening to Eric's story and some of the things that he's gone through and, you know, some of the things that he strives for. He seems to be a very, very good person, as is Shannon. And you're going to want to stay tuned for this interview. You're not going to get this type of interview anywhere else when it comes to MMA radio. I mean, that is just an absolute fact. We deliver some of the best interviews out there. I have people emailing me all the time asking me for interviews 2 or 3 years ago. And, you know, unfortunately, I can't save every interview I do because, you know, when you're on a site like Podomatic, you only have a certain amount of space. This show, we're basically an independent radio show. You know, we don't have a lot of revenue coming in, which I think is one of the things that makes this show great. But, you know, if we had some revenue coming in, if we had money coming in, it may change the dynamic. But I'm telling you, that's how good our interviews are. We get requests all the time for interviews in the past. So that's what we got coming up for you. We got Shannon the Cannon Rich and Eric Prindle. Shannon has had his fair share of haters, but people love when he's on the show, and he seems to thrive on whatever attention he gets, which is mainly positive at this stage. I mean, the guy's had over 100 fights. He's been fighting since 1991. And, you know what I found very interesting in this interview, and this is just one of many things that was disclosed in this interview. Shannon told a story of Anderson Silva and Anderson Silva's treatment of the fans. And I'm not going to go further into that. I want to kind of set that up as a teaser for you so you can listen to that. It's really shocking. Really is. But, you know, then again, we have people like Tito Ortiz in the MMA industry that I don't think treats the fans too well. But any event, that's all going to come out in this interview. And then after that, we've got some news and rumors. And then we'll go to our Dan Quinn update, okay? Unpaid intern Donnie Riley is going to play this interview. Play that tape, Donnie, please, okay? You're lucky to get any attention from me here. Here we go. Here is Shannon Rich and Eric Prindle. Enjoy, folks. Shannon Rich is a name familiar to most fans and observers of mixed martial arts. The Cannon has caused heated debate since his emergence onto the MMA scene in the late 90s. Now he's back on Carson's Corner, but this time he brings surging super heavyweight sensation Eric Prindle with him. Welcome to the show, both Shannon and Eric. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, I'm doing real good. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing awesome.
Thanks both again for coming on the show. And Shannon, thank you for returning with such a legitimate upcoming heavyweight like
yeah,
Eric.
You forgot to say he's the All-American Soldier. The American Soldier.
Believe me, we're going to get into that. We're going to get well into Eric's background. There's a lot of stuff I want to ask both of you separately and together. But if either of you has an opinion on what the other one is saying, feel free to interject into the conversation. Shannon, I want to start with you and get an update on your MMA career. You KO'd a previously undefeated fighter in your last outing in Rage in the Cage. Sure Dog lists it as a KO in around 20 seconds or so, which really, yes, to me, yep, sounds explosive. Take our listeners through your last fight. What happened from bell to bell?
From bell to bell, you know, I went out, we shook hands. I faked the double leg, and he went to sprawl. He put his hands down. I came in with an overhand right, kind of what happened to Steve Judson in the early UFCs. I faked the double leg, hit him with the right hand. He went to sleep, and that was it. Rest is history.
You're now on a two-fight win streak, 1-1 in 2011, 1-for-1 in 2011. Experts on the Underground Forum have argued at length over whether or not the year of the Cannon is due to come around again sometime soon. Back in 2008, you went 5-1, and I'd say that was the last year of the Cannon. Will we see another one? I mean, I know that the fans on the forums in particular want to know.
Well, let me tell you, Bob, it's not actually 2-1 or 2-0, it's 3-0. They don't have my last fight, which was against Torres. I'm trying to remember his name, but it was in Combatic Extremo in Mexico. I fought for Hector Molina, and I do have another win via submission in a leg lock, and Sure Dog's just not showing it. So I have won my last three fights. So three fights to me is a streak, and I want to continue that win streak.
Yeah, you want to keep it going. When will you be fighting again?
Well, it looks like I might be fighting July 16th for King of the Cage International in Canada for King Cups, and then possibly again in August, on August 20th in the Wild Horse Pass Casino in Phoenix, Arizona.
Do you have any idea who an opponent will be?
I have no idea. They haven't contacted me for an opponent. They just tentatively put me down on the roster.
Now, you've been fighting for a long time. At this stage, what are your goals? Do you have a specific goal, or are you just having fun with it and trying to make a living?
Well, I have made a good living at MMA. My goal is to be the king of the small MMA events. I've butted heads with Joe Silva in the past few years. He's let it be known, you know, at the UFC tryouts that I'm never going to get my shot in the UFC. So, you know, I've learned to live with that. So I will just know my role, I'll play my role, and I'll fight in all the small shows that'll let me fight.
Speaking of the UFC, the UFC main events are now increasingly going the distance. There seems to be a decreased rate of finishes in the UFC events due to fighters improving their skill level or maybe just a lack of will. I don't know, but do you agree with that assessment? Do you think that in a lot of these main events we're seeing a decreased rate of finishes?
Well, I think people are trying to go for the bonuses. You know, the UFC gives a huge bonus for knockouts, and they give a big bonus for finishes. I don't agree with you there, because I think a lot of fighters would like to finish the fight. You know, they don't want to leave it to the judges. It's just that now everybody is so good. They're good at jiu-jitsu. They're good at kickboxing. They're good at boxing. Even the guy that's coming up, and you know, you got a veteran who, when you look on paper, should just supposedly walk through this guy. They're going to decisions because everybody is, you know, at that weight, you know, with these weight classes, everybody's really good. So everybody's so good that, you know, it's a coin toss usually with these fights. It's like, you know, the guy that's supposed to win is sometimes leaving in the hands of the judges.
Yes, speaking of going the distance, Eric, you're known as a guy who generally doesn't go the distance.
Yes.
And do you have any thoughts on the new emphasis on wrestling and MMA? I mean, not all fans are happy with it. I mean, I think it's like Shannon says, you know, all fighters are just so skilled. The skill set of the fighters are evolving. I mean, it's evolving, you know, yearly on a daily basis, you know?
Oh, definitely. Everybody's getting better and better.
Do either of you think that anything needs to be changed about the judging, officiating, or the rules themselves in order to encourage exciting fights?
Me personally, I think they should start using previous fighters, like either fighters that's retired, because it just seems like, as a judge, it just seems like you'll have a judge, I'll be watching the same fight. Me and Shannon's watched the same fight. I forgot what fight it was. The guy in the red corner obviously won, and they gave it to the blue. And, you know, I just don't understand how they give some judges jobs and they have no experience with the MMA. So that's, you know, but I think, it's who's there at the time and all that, but it is what it is. And like I always say, and Shannon always says, you never try to leave it in the hands of the judges, because you never know.
You know, this is the reason why Ricardo Almeida he's retired from MMA, and now he's going right into judging, because there are not a lot of MMA fighters that are doing judging. And unfortunately, you know, many of the judges that judge boxing matches are judging MMA matches, and these guys are not familiar with MMA at all. I mean, if you look at almost all of the referees, look at a guy like John McCarthy, or you look at a guy like Dan Mirigliotta, or Herb Dean, or Yves Levine, they all have a martial arts background. They all know MMA. So, Eric, I think you're absolutely right on that.
Thank you.
Before we talk about your last fight, you defeated Josh Burns by doctor stoppage, and that was in the second round. Give us your thoughts on that fight up until that point when you defeated him.
My thoughts on that, I definitely learned a lot. I learned I shouldn't cut 30 pounds 2 days before the fight. Definitely going to do that different this time. As far as the fight, I think Josh Burns is one hell of a fighter. He's really skilled in his stand-up. He's fast. So I knew what I had to do was survive the first, little bit, start using my jab, throw a hard right hand and just try to land. And he's definitely a good opponent for me and made a great fight. Sorry they stopped it, but I think safety's first for fighters, definitely in Bellator, safety is the main thing. So, but no one wants to lose with the doctor's stoppage. So it is what it is, and I'm just going to keep moving forward and keep trying to win and keep moving up the heavyweight division.
You were penalized a point, I believe, for low blows. Was that a legitimate call on the ref's part?
Oh, definitely. I think, I think if you do it, this is just my opinion, if you do it a couple of times and it's not intentional, then maybe, take a point. I'm saying like two or three times. If you do it intentionally and you know the guy's doing it, then you take a point right away. But I think he did his job. He did it well, and you can't ask for much. I'm sure, if some guy's kicking me in the privates, and, if you fought before, the cup doesn't protect much, and it hurts pretty bad, and it could actually affect the whole fight. So I think he did a good job.
Some websites actually had you down on points going into the third round when the fight was stopped. Did you feel at all fortunate that the doctor said he couldn't continue, or were you ready to go for the third round to make it even more empathetic?
Actually, the first round I actually felt gassed out. And that's why, if you notice, if you watched it, I wasn't jabbing much. I wasn't really moving. The second round, I started jabbing a lot. Landed my 1-2, landing different leg kicks and stuff. The third round, I actually felt like I was getting my second wind. I felt like, I was gonna be able to really let loose, knowing I only had, 5 minutes left. You can do anything for about 5 minutes. So I thought I would actually, either end the fight. For me, I always try to end the fight, always finish. And I was kind of upset for Josh, but also I was upset for me because I wanted a really nice finish. I wanted to show Bellator, I wanted to show the crowds and my fans that I can finish at a higher level.
Have you always been a physically large human? I mean, did you have a high birth weight?
No, actually, my mom said I was like 5 pounds, so.
No figure.
Yeah.
And Bob, that's the smallest he's ever been in his whole life, with that 5 pounds.
Yeah,
He's 6'5", 290 pounds, cutting down to 265. He's like the Russian in Rocky IV. Whatever he hits, he destroys. I'm telling you, Eric Pringle's the next big thing. Eric Pringle's the next big thing.
Eric, were you strong as a child?
Oh, definitely. I was really strong. I had a Berger Water Power Clean record. I don't know if I still have it. I've pretty much lifted weights and power lifted growing up through high school and all that. So, yeah, I've been strong pretty much my whole life.
Some people have claimed that Jimmy Ambrose was the strongest man in MMA until Pujanovski came along. How strong did he feel in the ring?
Actually, he's a great guy. There's kind of different strengths. There's one is in the gym, lifting, and then there's grappling strength. And not trying to be mean or anything, he didn't feel strong at all. As far as, like, I felt, Brock Lesnar was way stronger than he was. Josh Barnett, you know, they've been doing it so long that they developed those muscles, the core muscles. I've seen what's his name squat like 800 pounds, and you know that's pretty impressive. But for one thing, when you're doing the heavy lifts, you only do it for 10 seconds or whatever. Grappling, you're doing that for 5 minutes straight. So I've lifted with bodybuilders, huge guys. I mean, make me look like a little twig, and they're strong for about 10 seconds, then they gas out, and then they're like Play-Doh. So, you know, he was a pretty strong guy, but not the strongest that I've ever rolled with.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, because you've trained with Brock Lesnar in his Death Clutch camp of huge heavyweights. Chris Tuscherer, a bunch of guys.
Josh Barnett, he just was at Josh Barnett's camp getting him ready for Brett Rogers.
Yeah, is there a strongest person you rolled with or fought?
One of the strongest guys that I rolled with, pretty much matching my strength, is Scott Peters. He's a great guy, really strong, really, really good grappler. And he's one of the main guys that I train with to help my game. He's definitely a better grappler than I am. And I always want to train with the best possible guys to keep getting better and better. I don't want to go to the gym and keep, not really have to work hard and go through guys. I want to be the underdog with my training partners. That way, I'm going to have to keep advancing, keep moving forward.
Your nickname, as Shannon alluded to, is the American Soldier. Can you give our audience a bit of backstory on your military career, how long it lasted and where you ended up with it?
Are you asking me that?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. I was in the military for 10 years. I was a sniper, kill gunner. Also was in WCAP. That's a world-class athletic program. I boxed around the world. I was at the Olympic Training Center for a while. Just basically did a bunch of jobs in the military. I loved it. I did a lot of jobs that I loved, and I love the camaraderie. That's probably the common denominator with MMA, and it's maybe one of the reasons why I came into MMA was the camaraderie. Like, I love Shannon Rich. I love everybody that I train with, and you can't find that. Like, say if it's 3 o'clock in the morning and my car runs out of gas, I know I could call Shannon. Yeah, he might bitch at me or make me run 5 more miles or something, but he's going to come get me. It's hard to find that outside of the military. So that's one of the main reasons why I love MMA. But as far as my military career, I'm a combat vet. I love the military, and I wish I could go back. I can't, but I just want to, if I could do anything to help any guys going into the military, or you know, any vets that are getting out that are having problem with PTSD, you know, if you see me, talk to me. And I've kind of overcome the major part of it, and I'm doing a lot better now, and that's through MMA and physical training.
That's amazing, because I know that, I mean, post-traumatic stress disorder and suicide rates amongst veterans that come back to the United States is extremely high relative to the general public. And, you know, the government is, I think, needs to do more to, you know, take care of these people when they come back. So it's great that you were able to, you know, to overcome that. I think that's remarkable. And to the UFC's credit, they've done some work with the troops as well. I remember, I think it was last year, they had a fundraiser for soldiers that have had traumatic brain injuries. And it's just really, really sad seeing some of these stories. On the MMA front, it seems like there's a link between the military and MMA these days, especially with fighters like Brian Stann, Tim Kennedy, yourself, and Shannon. Is there a hierarchy of military fighters? I mean, would you and Kennedy have to fall in and obey orders if Brian Stan started giving them?
Say that again. Did you say, is there a hierarchy of MMA fighters from the military?
Yeah, basically, yeah. I mean,
basically, I don't think there's a hierarchy. I think there's a popularity, you know, someone's more popular than the other, but I think as far as we're all going to get popular, we're all going to keep trying to get better, and it's who could be in this game the longest, like Shannon Rich. He's been in it for, God, I don't know how many years, and he's going strong. He's getting over injury, and he's coming back and fighting. I think he's like 6 months ahead of his injury. He got released by a doctor, and he's doing great. So I think, you know, we're all going to keep moving forward, keep getting better, and just loving our sport. If you love something that you're doing, you're going to do it, and you're going to do it well. So that's basically.
And both you guys having military experience, I'm sure you've learned a whole bunch of lessons from being in the military. I mean, I imagine it must have been a full spectrum of experiences for both of you.
Definitely.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a growing up experience, too, when you're in the military. You know, get you a chance to grow up, see the world, learn about respect and discipline. I mean, I would recommend every American male and female, if they wanted to go in the military, to at least do 2 years. You know, that's just my opinion. You know, take it for what it's worth, but I think the military did me good.
I think that too. You know, other countries make their men go into like the Rock Army and Korea.
Yeah, Korea.
Israeli. What else? There's a bunch.
The Israelis do. I mean, it's mandatory that you have to serve in the Israeli Army.
Yeah, Israeli Army. Also, I was just in Israel a couple months ago, and we actually went and did some training with some of the Israeli Army. It was pretty cool.
What's your military status right now? Have you done any of the sort of private work that Shannon has done with groups like XZ and former Blackwater organization?
I've done similar stuff. I just got back from Iraq, I think 8 months ago, I think, and I went over, I can't really talk about what I was doing, but just, similar stuff, you know, just helping our troops out, doing security, personal security, and watching out for stuff.
Just a question for either one of you can answer. Is it true that private contractor work in the military pays 4 to 5 times what the average soldier is making?
I can answer that. That's a definitely yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And at the
same time, you got to realize also the soldier is getting other benefits versus the private contractor. So they do get paid more, but there is benefits to being a soldier as well. So
Yeah, absolutely.
So in other words, a private contract soldier may not be eligible for VA care for the rest of his life or something like that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, you're not going to get VA, you're not going to get VAH, VAQ, you're not going to get your housing paid for. You're only getting your housing paid for while you're on your contract. But once you come home, you're on your own. In the military, even when you're on leave or at home, you're still getting paid.
I want to ask you both about something that's kind of sensitive in the MMA community. Recently surrounding Skip Hall's fraudulent military background, which was exposed by members of the website ProfessionalSoldiers.com. Do either of you have any thoughts on Skip Hall being exposed as a clerk typist rather than the leader of an elite Navy SEAL unit? It seems as though there's a problem with people making false claims about their military service, and there's an entire website, and even the FBI sometimes puts some efforts into tracking these people down.
I think it's good they should track it down. I mean, out here, even in Arizona, you know, they have the Veterans Day Parade, and you have guys out there that are claiming that they were Vietnam War veterans and, you know, medal recipients, and then they come to find out that they never were even in the military. I mean, that's a slap in the face anybody that's ever served or ever put on a uniform.
I personally think those people that are doing that, they're going to meet their maker, or even inside their self when they look in the mirror, and they know what they're doing is wrong, and they're going to have to pay for it. So either if they pay for it now or later when, you know, it happens, when they pass away, they'll pay for it. So I don't think we need to be wasting millions and millions of dollars of trying to stop that or anything, but I think they'll get what's coming to them, basically. Murphy's Law or karma, that's what I basically believe in. So that's but it is wrong, without a doubt. It is wrong, and it makes you know, my fellow soldiers and Marines, and it makes it almost, it really disrespects us.
Why do you think people do this? Why do you think people feel the need to exaggerate their military background and claim to be heroes when they're not? I mean, is it for a financial thing, or is it to boost their ego, you think? Because, you know, I mean, being a clerk typist is an honorable service, but, you know, I don't know. Maybe,
well, it's, in my opinion, a lot of it is these young guys or these older guys that they haven't probably done much with their life, and they're feeling insecure about themselves. If you're secure, you're not going to lie. You're not going to do all the stuff that, you know, that's associated with that. So I think a lot, like I was at a bar a couple months ago, and I look over, and this guy's talking to this girl, and he's saying, yeah, I just got back from Ranger school and all this, and I busted him out. Knowing he didn't go to Ranger school, I asked him what class 8 he was and what the Ranger Creed is. And he was, you know, tongue-tied. He couldn't tell me. And I just looked at the girl and was like, I wouldn't talk to him, and walked away. Because just right there, if you know a guy's going to lie about that, you don't want to be around him.
That's a very good point. Very good point. Getting back to your in-ring career, Eric, what's next for you in the ring? I would assume that we'll be seeing you on a future Bellator show.
Do you have any tournament?
Right now I'm in the heavyweight tournament. I was the first one announced for Bellator. I don't know who I'm fighting yet, but basically I'm gonna start training with Scott Peters, Shannon Rich, Josh Barnett, bunch of guys, like I said, the best of the best I want to train with, and just get best possible prepared I can for this upcoming tournament. And if I'm prepared to the best I possibly can, I believe I'll win. And, you know, I want to win the heavyweight tournament so I could fight Cole Conrad. I trained with Cole. He's a great guy. He's one hell of a wrestler. And I think that would make one of the best fights in UFC, or excuse me, in MMA. I honestly believe that would.
Well, speaking of the UFC, there's some news about Bellator maybe moving to Spike TV, and that the UFC is considering buying it as well. What do you think about that?
I don't really get into somewhat of the politics of that. Basically, I just hope I don't lose my job. And if it happens, I think Spike TV would be awesome for Bellator, personally. But like I said, I just don't want to lose my job. I want to keep fighting, keep winning. Once you kind of go on a big show, it hurts your feelings if you go back to the smaller shows. So I definitely don't want to do that, but I think it would be a good addition to Spike TV.
How ready? Go, China.
Hey, the people, you know, in the audience that are listening, you know, maybe some of them don't know who Eric Prindle is. Is there a way we can do a shout-out? It's www.ericprindle.com, where they can go on there and actually see some pictures of Eric and see what a behemoth he is. You know, 6'5", 290 pounds, solid muscle. I'm telling you, this guy's going to be the next big thing. He's being very, very calm and very respectful, which that's Eric. I'm more outspoken. But I'm telling you right now, Eric's not only going to win the Bellator tournament, he's going to end up getting that UFC belt. Eric is the man, and he's for real.
Eric, how do you feel you stack up against UFC-level talent? I mean, last week, I don't know if you saw the pay-per-view, Dave Herman did very, very well. He's a big heavyweight. I don't know where – I think he trains now out of Las Vegas, but – you know, you've got some decent fighters in the heavyweight division. Do you think you would do well against any of their top talent there?
I've trained with a couple of UFC heavyweight title holders. You know, they've had the belt, and I think if I get my striking, my wrestling, and without any injuries, I think I would do very well, if not beat, you know, nowadays I think, like Shannon, you guys were saying, pretty much everybody's getting so well versed, and with the heavyweight game, all it takes is one mistake. You either drop your hand in the wrong time, or, you know, get on the bottom and get next to the cage, the fight's pretty much over. Everybody's so explosive, so strong, and especially with the 4-ounce gloves, it's easy to knock people out. I've done sparring with 20-ounce gloves and knocked people out, and I didn't think I was punching that hard. So yeah. I think I stack up well, especially being a larger guy. I'm bigger than Brock, even though he's an awesome guy. Hopefully he gets better. You know, I pray for him. I pray for his family and everybody and everybody over at Death Clutch. And I hope they're doing good. But I definitely think, without being cocky, but I think I definitely can give everybody a run for the money, so to speak.
Let's talk about your association with Shannon. Can you two give the audience some backstory about how you two met?
You go ahead, you tell it.
Basically how we met, a guy called me and asked if I would, I think it was, do a show fighting Japan, I believe it was, and we were supposed to meet then, and then...
Rick Bassman.
Yeah, Rick Bassman. What happened? I don't really even remember. What the whole deal
we went down there and met with Inoki, and not Antonio Inoki, but Simon Inoki, and they were going to do a pro wrestling event, and they wanted to get some Americans to take them to Japan. Since I've already been there and worked with Rick Bassman, he said, hey, there's a guy in Arizona, really big guy, why don't you meet with him, why don't you guys practice, train, and come down? Well, at that time, we never met up, we never got together, but if you fast forward it, about a year later, Eric and I actually met face to face, we talked about it. I looked at Eric and said, hey, man, if you're serious about fighting, I think I can help you out. You know, there's some people I know and, you know, with the people you know. And, you know, Eric was training with Brock Lesnar at Brock Lesnar's camp. He was training with Eric Paulson and Josh Barnett in California. So I knew Eric had the fundamentals to take it to the next level. I got an opportunity to go fight in Singapore. I asked Eric, hey, do you want to go? We started a fight camp. I took Eric over there. And he shocked the world, and he beat a really, really tough heavyweight. And we've been friends ever since.
Eric, does it ever surprise you that some people consider Shannon a controversial figure?
I do, just because I know what I know of him. He's a great guy. He'll do anything for you. And it just seems I've never seen that part of Shannon. I honestly don't think it's there. So... But he is, I think some people perceive him maybe, I don't want to say wrong, but because Shannon is, you know, outgoing, boisterous. Maybe some people take that the wrong way. So, you know, that's, but I think Shannon's, I would do anything for him. I would trust him with my wife and kids, and that's a major thing for me is my family. So, you know, I love him. He's a great guy, but I don't see how some people say he's, you know, whatever they say. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I've known Shannon for a few years, and he's always been great to us. He's always been right on the money. I mean, you can count on him to do a favor and vice versa. So I sort of see Shannon the same way. Shannon, you definitely seem to have phases where your levels of haters go up and down. Right now, as it stands, how do you feel in terms of your perception or how you're perceived in the global MMA community? Do you think that there's a lot of hate right now?
You know what? It goes without saying. Either you love Shannon McCannon or you hate him. But either way, promoters still call me. Promoters still ask me to fight. And I'll show up and I'll fight. You know, win, lose, or draw. It's going to be an exciting fight for the fan. I'm always the first guy out there shaking hands and taking pictures with the kids and, you know, to bring up a story, but this is what I'm getting at. You know, I've been fighting since 1991. I got 20 years in MMA. I'm 40 years old. Am I ever going to be the UFC champion? No, I'm not. But I'm going to be a guy that, you know, fights these up-and-coming guys, and hopefully I get the crowds what they look for. And, you know, I shake hands and take pictures and sign autographs with anybody. Just the other day, there's a guy named Mr. Anderson Silva came to Arizona, and these kids had his pictures, and I mean, this was a little tiny Rage in the Cage event, and they came up to him and they said, "Mr. Silva, can you please sign my autograph? Can you take a picture with me?" And his interpreter looked and said, "If you pay me $10,000, we'll sign." Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? He wouldn't even take a picture with these little kids. That to me is not only disrespectful, but it's a slap in the face to the fans, because without the fans, the MMA fighter is nothing. We are nobody. I mean, I understand Anderson Silva is the champion. I understand that he is, you know, he's making a ton of money. And the UFC probably, you know, he's on a contract where it says you can't sign autographs without getting paid. I mean, I understand that. But as a man to man, as a human, as a fighter, man, I can't see how you won't sign a picture or take a picture with a little kid. I just can't see it.
Yeah, that to me, you know, sounds disgraceful, and it reminds me of Tito Ortiz. I mean, Tito Ortiz years ago, I was supposed to interview him. He emailed me because I have a very good, I've had a decent relationship with Ken Pavia, who used to manage Tito Ortiz.
Yeah.
And Tito emailed me. I still have the email on Podomatic. He's like, "I'd love to be on your show anytime." And then I emailed him to set it up, and he wanted to charge me money. You know, it's bad. It's
yeah.
Profiteering. And, you know, I guess it's their right to do that. But you know, when you hear something like that, you think less of a person.
Yeah. I mean, I know it wasn't me.
If you have some people that's never really seen MMA and they see some of the fighters that act like that, it gives all of MMA a bad name. And that's 99.9% of MMA fighters are like me and Shannon. We'll take pictures, autographs, whatever people want.
Even talk to the fans. Right. I mean, I've been so many times. You just go out and talk to the fans that are standing in line, and you just talk to them. No big deal.
Yeah, exactly. But I just don't understand why those 1% of MMA fighters don't understand it's going to make everybody look bad, so then maybe those people are not going to want to watch it or buy those tickets to the show. You know, the world is what it is, and like me and Shannon and everybody, we just got to keep, you know.
Hey, Bob, I wanted to bring something up because he's a mutual friend of you two. I'm at an event right now, and I just ran into Drew Fickett, and he came up to me and gave me a big hug, and he told me he's been clean and sober for over 6 months now. So I just wanted to let everybody know that Drew Fickett is, you know, he's coming back. He looked great. He's like 170 pounds, just ripped. Said he's clean and sober for the last 6 months, you know, so that's awesome for Drew.
Yeah, I hope he lost in his last fight. I think he got KO'd pretty early by a decent fighter in MFC. Prior to that, you know, he was on a couple fight win streak, I believe. He beat choked out.
He said he won like five in a row.
Yeah, right. So he's one of these guys that can. He's very, very talented, Drew Pickett. I mean, he's one of these guys that can literally beat anybody in the world, you know.
I sat there and told him I was getting ready to do an interview with you, and he told me to tell you hi. So, you know, I wanted to remember to do that.
Thanks. Shannon, I just wanted to talk about something about your career as far as the haters. The negativity towards you seems to have settled down somewhat after it peaked in the mid-2000s. What would you say was the all-time worst period for fan reaction for the Cannon? Was it right after the Severn fight?
Yeah, probably right after the Severn fight because, you know, they assumed it was a work fight. And, I mean, I've sat down with Dan and asked him, you know, personally, point blank, Dan, was this a work fight? Why are people saying that? And, still to this day, it's mind-boggling. He looked at me and said, Shannon, why would I need to do a work fight with you? And I'm not to disrespect me, but it's twice my size. You know what I mean? There's no beneficial reason in the world for them to even consider that. I mean, shit, I lost the fight. If I'm going to do a work, I'm going to win.
Yeah,
I don't know. And, you know, people say, well, it's because you did a somersault. Man, the dude threw me, and I rolled.
Yeah, right.
But that's a back roll you learn the first day of the white belt in karate. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, that was one of them.
It's history. It doesn't matter now.
You're right. And the main thing or one of the things that sticks out in my mind, to be fair, many people disagreed with your fight with Brian Ebersole as far as that being suspicious. And most people felt like you guys were trying to fight and entertain at the same time.
I'm going to tell you straight, honestly to God, have you ever watched Brian Ebersole fight? He fights the same way every time. He just did it in the last UFC where he fought, where he had the arrow on his chest. That guy does cartwheels. He does backflips, front flips. I mean, he does all kinds of crazy stuff. I was fighting him. I was putting him at bay. I was I took him down. He did a cartwheel pass, and the referee said, I mean, not the ref, but the boxing commission said, that's not MMA. You guys are doing a work fight. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Have you never seen a cartwheel pass? That's what we got to get with the boxers versus the jiu-jitsu guys or the MMA guys in there as judges and boxing commissioners, etc. He suspended me for 2 years. I was suspended over nothing. I could have paid the $2,000 fine and got my license back, but I didn't just out of protest because I was so pissed that, you know, why am I going to pay the commission this money for him doing a cartwheel pass? I mean, Brian Ebersole is a great fighter, and he's still fighting exactly the same way he did then.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's a great guy. He's one of these guys that's a very unorthodox fighter, and he finally got into the UFC now, and he's one of these guys that would never charge anybody in a million years for an autograph or anything like that.
Bob, you got in the UFC after freaking 50 fights, you got in the UFC.
Yeah.
The guy's only lost, like, I think 9 or 10. I mean, the kid is good.
Yeah, he's going to pose a problem for anybody in his division. Eric, I want to get to you. I want to do a complete 360 here. I saw a memorial message on your website for an MMA fan, Ed Holt. That name wasn't familiar to me, but he seems to have been an influence in your life. Do you want to tell the folks about that?
Yeah, this great guy, he would do anything for you. And he passed away. He had cancer. He actually had brain cancer. I was in Minnesota, and we met, had lunch there. He flew in. We had lunch there, and he told me he had cancer, and we were with a bunch of friends. And that was the beginning of the camp. And sorry, I don't want to get all emotional, but he went home, had, you know, saw his kids and stuff and died a week later. And it just kills me when, you know, I just had a friend die. I buried him Saturday.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a part of life, but it's not a part that I like. And it's just sad when you see someone, such a strong, such a happy man or woman, whatever, and you just see the life gets sucked away from them, and and they die, you know. But it is a sad thing, but it's a part of life, and we gotta, that's why, you know, a lot of people ask me, why do you seem happier, or you're such a big guy and you're so nice, or whatever, and honestly, I'm just glad to be alive. I lost my brother not too long ago. He died at work, and he kissed his son and went to work just like, you know, 99.9% of men that go to work, or even women, and who knows when our next day is going to be our last day. So that's why I'm always trying to be nice, and always, I'm always trying to be thankful. And part of the thing, like, when I win a fight, I got yelled at by one promoter that why didn't I run around and with my hands up, because I went right to the opponent, was like hugging them, and it, part of the reason is because I know I won, meaning someone lost. And that just, right. To me, it makes me feel a little sad. So that's about it, you know.
Well, Eric, listen, I'm really sorry for your recent losses. It seems that we here in the MMA world have been losing a lot of people connected to MMA recently. You know, I hope that everyone who lost a friend or a loved one is doing okay. I lost both of my parents not too long ago. 3 years apart, and my grandmother after that. And you know something, I'm sure you guys can personally attest to this. When you're in combat and you have, you know, bombs going off and you have bullets going over your head, and you see constant loss of life, because that's war is hell, as they say. I'm sure that you know, both of you probably have a greater appreciation for life than most people out there. You know, because you've seen the worst of humanity. I don't want to say the worst of humanity, but you've seen, you
seen
know,
bad stuff. You know, a lot of bad stuff.
Life at its grim stages, and so, you know.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss. That's a horrible thing.
Yeah,
you know what? I don't mean to interrupt, but the only thing that gives me a little bit of I don't want to say happiness, but maybe content is knowing we'll see him again. So, you know, I'll see my friend, my brother. You'll see your parents, and hopefully not too soon, but we'll see everybody that we love. So,
listen, I want to thank both of you guys for coming on the show with me today, and this is one of our greatest interviews. It's been, from my perspective, in recent memory. You know, I think this is great. I think we went around the horn here, and we spoke about so many different subjects. And Eric, I think the MMA fans that listen to this interview are really, really going to get a feel for, you know, just what type of a guy you are. And the gentle
giant there.
Yeah, I mean, I know this is a cliche, but we need more people in the sport like you, Eric, and like you too, Shannon. I mean, but both of you guys, you know, seem to be cut from the same cloth in many regards.
Hey, Bob, before we go, can I say something? I didn't get to touch base with you, but I got a video game coming out. It's going to be on the iPhone, the iPad, the Droid, and casinos all over the United States. And it's featured with me and Misha Takedown Tate. And it'll be available at the Apple iPad downloads, you know, the store where you go to buy the Apple, the apps, and that's going to come out July 4th, and it's called MMA Battleground. So just to throw that out there.
July 4th.
Oh, I'm going to get that.
Yeah, I'm sure most will. A lot of people will. Eric, do you have any sponsors or events that you want people to check out, any websites, social networking sites?
Oh, definitely. EricPrindle.com. Also, Tap Out Magazine just did a big article. It's actually, I think, coming out today, so you guys could see some pictures of my last fight, and they did a big, pretty cool article. My wife read it, and she was actually teary-eyed, so that was kind of cool. But what else? I just want to say thank you to all my sponsors. Subway, definitely. Spine Crank. I can't remember them all right now, but definitely thank you to all my training partners also. Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you. Thank both of you guys for coming on. And hopefully we can do this sometime again in the future. I think this is a great combination. And, you know, I'm sure we'll have a lot more things to talk about in the future with both of your careers. Shannon, Rich, Eric Prindle, thank you very much.
All right, man. You have a good one.
I want to thank Shannon, Rich, and Eric Prindle for appearing on the show with me today. Like I said before that interview, I know you guys love to hear from Shannon, whether you admire his prolific fights or not. And I know that those of you that have listened to that interview, the thousands of people most likely that have listened to that interview, will walk away a huge fan of Eric Prindle. I mean, how can you not be? Okay? We'll have them both back on in the future, so send in any questions you may have for them. Let's talk about some news and rumors here before we get to our Dan Quinn update, okay? I want to wish good wishes to Troy Ross. Canadian residing cruiserweight Troy Ross has reportedly been hospitalized with stomach pains. In addition to being a cruiserweight contender, Ross has also appeared in various big screen movies playing a variety of different boxes from the past. He starred in Cinderella Man with Russell Crowe as John Henry Lewis and Phantom Punch with Ving Rhames, where Ross played all-time great puncher Floyd Patterson. We here at Carson's Corner want to extend our best wishes to Troy and hope these medical issues are resolved quickly. While we're on boxing, let me give you some more news here. Cotto vs. Margarito has been signed for December, and I have mixed feelings about this. It looks like a sure thing. Apparently a rematch will take place in December. Cotto, as I understand it, wants to get revenge against a guy who may have defeated him with the dirtiest trick in the book, loaded gloves. I hate to see Margarito being sanctioned to fight. This guy literally had his hands wrapped in casts beneath his gloves. He was using weapons in a sporting contest, and it's disgusting, folks. Okay, he actually tried to play dumb about it, as if any professional fighter wouldn't feel the difference in their hand wraps right away. I mean, give me a break, okay? He fought a good fight, I thought, against Pacquiao, showed a lot of heart, but that does not take away from what he did, okay? Cotto thinks that Margarito used loaded wraps in their fight and wants to have a rematch with him. I understand that. You know, how can he not? But I hate to see Margarito make any more money from boxing when he violated the fundamental rules of the sport. He's coming off a serious eye injury, as I understand it, and needs to be careful for his long-term health, fighting a fired-up opponent who may literally want to kill him. I don't know, but we'll see what happens. This is going to take place in December, and we'll keep an eye on it. On the MMA front, we have a huge, huge heavyweight GP show this week, the Grand Prix. If you're a fan of combat sports, and I'm sure you don't need me to tell you about the big Verdum Overeem rematch and the Strikeforce card taking place this Saturday, I think Verdum has been one of the most consistently underrated heavyweights due to his loss to Arlovski and Junior Dos Santos, but beating Fedor changed that somewhat, okay? You know, at that point, you know, Fedor, he struggled against Brett Rogers, but I think everybody was just shocked. And Verdum seems to be increasing his wrestling prowess. We heard about him taking down Cormier this week, which is an incredible feat given Cormier's level of wrestling skill. That said, obviously Overeem is probably the most physically intimidating fighter in the world right now. He's also a very skilled grappler, and importantly, a real strategist, despite the fact that his fights often appear to be simple beatdowns. He's been a martial artist, Overeem, for a long time now. He started very, very young, and we'll see what happens. Will Verdum pull off shocking submission wins in this tournament, or will Overeem do what most people expect him to do, is win by another devastating KO? Why is it that the UFC seemingly can't assemble cards this good? It really is the fault of the tiny matchmaker, Joe Silva. I guess we'll see in the near future, unless the FTC forces the UFC to break up. And we're hearing that the UFC may be looking to purchase Bellator. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, because the Federal Trade Commission, according to reports, may be investigating the UFC. I want to just briefly touch on this before we go to Dan Quinn. We're keeping an eye on this, okay? There seems to be an evolving FTC, Federal Trade Commission, investigation into the UFC to, you know, regulate in business. Analysts who faulted the UFC for their Pac-Man-type enthusiasm at gobbling up other promotions were scoffed at by ignorant MMA fans, but it looks like the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, is now scrutinizing Zuffa. We talked last about the rumors that the UFC might even buy Bellator, meaning that they'd own basically every major MMA promotion in the United States. How can that not be considered anything other than a monopoly? It's strange to me that they haven't been advised against expanding so aggressively. I'm definitely not an expert, and I can't predict the outcome of this investigation, such as it is at the moment, but I definitely understand why it might be warranted. I think the MMA fans would benefit from having some decent-level shows not run by Dana White. Does anybody actually agree with that? You don't count Dana White. Don't forget that you wanted a reality show about yourself. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine a reality show all about Dana White? He's taller than all the fighters are in the posters, and just he's always trying to be the center of attention. I don't know. You know, the FTC hopefully will do its job for once and actually start to regulate monopolies in this country. We're going to go to our Dan Quinn update. Just so you know, Dan Quinn has a new YouTube account. It's Stevia Quinn 1, the same as it was. It's the same as before, but only with the letter 1, okay? It appears that the incident with a deranged fan caused the loss of Dan's previous account. Shame on whoever did that, which is Steve Stevia. So I think it's unfortunate because he erased a lot of videos. There was videos of me losing weight. And by the way, I'm still on Stevia. I'm doing very, very well. I have lost more weight since I was in California. I'm working on trying to get some video documentation of that. We'll bring that to you as soon as possible. But we're going to leave you with this update of Dan Quinn. Thanks again to Shannon and Eric for joining me. We're going to put together another show and an interview, and we'll be back sometime early next week. Until that time, I assume you're still doing what I said to do during the Margarito segment. And I said, well, no, I didn't say that. No, I meant to say show some respect, okay? We'll see you next week, folks. Take care.
Steve doesn't like to eat pussy, all right? And I'm thinking that there might be a latent homosexual thing going on, and he's a little angry. And I would like to beat that chubby slow kid up on video, on film. And, you know, if Mots or anybody out there that likes fights and wants to put something together, a lot of people, I think, would actually watch that fight, all right? Me beating Stevia up, or vice versa, if he got, like, one in a million lucky. And, yeah, that kid, he's a cancer. But he's preventing women from actually finding out that Stevia can alleviate it. I mean, if Alex Sonoma's breast miracle was extrapolated across the United States, how many millions of women have been saved already since he started his little campaign, right?
Right. Well, you know, it's very unfortunate. And you do have a new YouTube page up. It's at YouTube.com/StevieQuinn1, and you're not going to give anybody the password anymore, right? I mean, the password is secure.
The password. Well, Corey Paul, who started it, has a password. I'll secure it in a little bit, and then I want to do a shout out. I think it might be to Charles or to the really cool Canadian that made the website for me a couple of years ago that I never used. And if he can get in touch with me, I could just go to a website and, you know, say, screw YouTube. They have neo-Nazis on there, you know, shutting my account down for bullshit, for trying to get the truth out. That would save lives. And they're basically up to no good.
Have some of the Stevia Players Club members or the old people that used to post on your old YouTube page found your new YouTube page?
You know what? I haven't really paid attention, and I am going to. And I can tell you this, that anybody that supported the Stevie PD page, you know, I turned my back on them. That was nothing but ridicule and deceit from the start. Okay? It wasn't designed to help Stevie in any way. You know, you can look through, if you take a film of somebody, Mel Gibson, anybody, all right, you can find clips or, you know, frames of their face looking contorted and like shit. And that's what that asshole did when he said that, you know, I think that it makes you, basically, you approximate your 20-year-old self. You might look older, right? But you're just going to be a leaner version. And, you know, he tried to denigrate, tried to make me look bad. He's responsible for death. Seriously, if Alex and Naomi's miracle happened in 14 days and Steve was undermining me from the start, how many people didn't listen and how many people are dead because of that little bastard, all right? I call him a punk. I call him every word that you can think of on the phone, all right? And I said that I'd say it right to your face, man. And if you had the nuts to come out and actually face me, you know, I'd show 40-somethings what they could do to 20-somethings with loud mouths, all right, because it brings your body back. And I'll thump that kid.
And also, too, I mean, I know we spoke about this earlier. Your shoulder, you're doing fine, Dan?
Yeah, my shoulder, I still have to use a TENS unit to deal with the pain, but, you know, that little workout that we did, you know, when he first came out, that's the first time that I lifted weights since my surgery, and it's feeling remarkably better, and I'm hoping that they're going to let me come back at Carnage, you know, there has been a lot of controversy and a lot of stuff surrounding me, but it's like this. Dan Quinn discovered the cure. Dan Quinn discovered an upgrade to the Kama Sutra that, you know, well, theoretically, if every woman around the world listened to me and my discoveries, they could drink sweet liquids, eat sweet sweets, have perfect bodies, and then have 20, 30, 100 orgasms every night if their men or women, whoever pleasured them, play the violin. I mean, theoretically, that's a future possibility. So they're going to remember my name for a long time. And it's not like I wasn't a god back when I was in Notre Dame. And I'll tell you what, back then, I didn't think that the little people, so to speak, were like all that important. You know, I was like so many athletes that are coddled, you know, because you're special, because you can play, right? And I wouldn't have had the same empathy for everybody on this planet that I have now. And fact is, my mom saw Peachy come back from the virtual dead, okay? She was better off dead. Just because Peachy's a cat doesn't mean that Pure Sure won't have the same effect on, you know, let's say 87-year-old women that are at the hospital right now about to die from cancer, all right? So one day I'm going to be rich. I hope I'm alive to see it. And you know what? This Boggle thing, all right, it's not my fault. Crazy Joe talked to me in terms, people looked at me like when he talked like that in person, like, are you going to do something about that? And I just let it ride. And finally, you know, I had enough. I get accused of making his little girl cry when he's screaming at me on the phone and I'm not even there. And I said, dude, don't even try that shit. And I was laughing. And then I get, you know, threats from him and a hang up. And then from Jack Short, what I get is a death threat text, you know. I did what I did. If I was in the wrong, they would have already done something about it, all right? And fact is, I shouldn't lose any coup or face or whatever because of that little incident. Shouldn't happen, okay? And fact is, stevia and the violin work, all right? Stevia makes what acts like a fountain of youth. I'm just too poor to get it out. But you know what, Bob? It's going to happen here soon enough, and I'm actually walking into the tanning bed right now.
Let me just a few more recaps here, if I would.
Okay.
You spoke to Tara Chow on the video, and did you post on your new YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/stevia21?
Hold on one second. I'm sorry. Go ahead. What would I like to do with Terry Chow?
Well, yeah. What would you like to do with her? And secondly, did you post a video of you talking to her on the phone?
Yes, I did. And, you know, what I would like is for her to actually drive over and pick up that pound of stevia that I think you should try to get used to the taste. It's probably just stronger than what you have. But, you know, yeah. That would be, you know, good so you can come over and show validation. And, you know, oh, I want Terra Chow to be real very, very, very much.
And secondly, you know, Father's Day is coming up. What is, are you still not talking to your kids because of the Steviapedia page?
Supposedly my youngest is going to come over and we're going to do Father's Day. My oldest is holding it against me. And yeah, it's the Steviapedia page. And it's also probably, you know, the prospect of embarrassment of that because of what I'm saying. And there's a really good possibility it might actually go down like this because I've been threatened so many times and there's so many cowards out there, you know, on sugar or the health industry, you know, actually pay attention. They assassinate me, my ideas are validated, and then my sons feel guilty and use, you know, profits to, you know, further my agenda, which is to make everything, you know, equitable, equal for all. There's more than enough money to do that, all right? If I could bottle up the Fountain of Youth and sell it for a dollar, there's 300 million people in the United States, all right? They got to drink a gallon of water about every day. We're talking about $1 billion every 3 days in the United States alone. You know, making companies that do just like the companies do now, but only to spread it around and everybody has enough. That's what I like to do. And then what I'd like them to do is to hunt down legally every one of my haters and to ruin their lives with money to show other people that you don't fuck with a miracle when it comes along because they're so special, you know. You got to treat them like gold.
Well, listen, Dan, I'm glad that you're up and running again. I'm glad it sucks that the old page was taken down, but we're just going to have to get that new address out there.
Okay.
So people can visit and see what you got going on.
Thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate it. And as soon as you can hit me on again, we can recap maybe with Frank Duke about him thinking, you know, a lot of evil money is behind people trying to pull me down. Like in
the
movie Ghost, the black things that come out of the ground, you know?
Yes.
You know, okay, that's what these people are. I'm just saying that I have a miracle and I got to get in here. Or they're going to get mad at me because I'm taking
all right,
too long.
Dan. Thanks for the update.
Thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate it, brother.
Take care, Dan.
You too. Bye.